Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. This is a lecture regarding the effective use of visual aids, both in the classroom and in the business world. And I have to tell you that one of the reasons you're going to want to listen carefully to this lecture, I think, is because both of the major speeches that you're going to be doing in this class require the effective use of visual aids. Both the informative speech and the speech to persuade is going to require that you use visual aids at some point. So you may want to listen to this lecture for the first time right before you do your informative speech, and then perhaps re-listen to it before you do your persuasive speech at the end of the semester. We're going to cover some very basic things here, things like why we ought to use visual aids in the first place, why they're useful to speakers, and why it seems like so many people use them. We're going to talk about some basic rules of thumb for using different kinds of visual aids. And then finally, we're going to consider what is probably the most pervasive software package for creating visual aids or for providing documentation of presentations, and that's PowerPoint. There have been some very interesting struggles in the professional literature related to PowerPoint, and I'd like to at least raise that controversy for you and talk a little bit about one of the leading critics of the use of PowerPoint slides. Okay. I think we first have to consider why we would use visual aids at all, and I think that there are probably three good reasons. The first is that they save time and they add interest. They save time because, if you go back to the truism that a picture is worth a thousand words, visual aids become the way that you can present information in a very rhetorically efficient way to your audience. Good visual aids are information dense. That is, they pack a lot of information into just one particular visual aid. They help audiences to kind of understand the context of what it is you're doing, and they break up your presentation a little bit. They add a little interest. They divert the audience's attention. It gives them something different to look at, and pretty much all the research that's available in my field seems to suggest that audiences rate speakers who use visual aids as more interesting than those who do not. And so that alone might be a reason to use visual aids. A second reason is that they actually do improve listener retention. And that's important. They improve listener retention. That is, people who use visual aids in their speech will find that their audiences have a tendency to remember both for a longer period of time and more of the information that they present because they've assisted their presentation with visual aids. I'm going to talk about a study that was done a few years ago that illustrated that point. A final reason for using visual aids has to do with, a theory of education that I had only been introduced to in the last, say, 10 or 15 years. And that is that education specialists have come up with the notion that there are those of us who learn differently. That is, we don't all optimally take information in the same way. I distinctly remember that I was not one of those people who could actually study in quiet in the library. It would just drive me crazy that there was so much silence. I did a far better job of studying for exams or writing papers when I was sitting next to the jukebox in the coffee shop on campus at the University of Massachusetts. It's simply the way it was. I wasn't a person who thrived on silence. Some people need to be able to read what they are learning so that they become visual learners in a sense. Other people are oral learners. They can simply listen to a lecture and that works great for them. One of the things that influenced how I put together this class was to make sure that we had both a visual component, and that's the PowerPoint slides, and an oral component, and that's obviously this audio file, so that listeners have the chance to get this information in two ways. They're getting it not only visually, but they're also getting it orally. There's enough complexity to the way people learn that I think it pays some dividends to make sure that you maximize the number of modalities or the number of channels through which you can educate your audience. And so visual aids, I think, help because they add or allow for a different learning style. I want to talk a little bit about a study that was done some years ago. It was actually done by the 3M Corporation. At least they paid for the study. It was actually done at the University of Minnesota. And what they did was to compare speeches that were delivered with visual aids and without visual aids to see what impact that all might have on retention, on learning, on whether or not audiences remembered a message of a speaker. So if you look at the graph that's on that next PowerPoint slide, you'll see it says verbal and visual recall. The first three bars that you see there are the ones that show the different modalities in which the presentation was made. The darkest bar there was a verbal-only presentation, so somebody simply gave a speech. The next bar over was a visual-only presentation, that is, the information was communicated to the audience only by means of visual aids. And then the final bar that you see there, and somewhat higher than the rest, in fact, it tops out at like 85%, is a combination of verbal and visual, the kind of modality that we're going to use during the information speeches, the informative speeches, and the persuasive speeches. So, and they also took account of time. As time elapses, how much does an audience remember? So that you see after 3 hours, frankly, there's not a huge amount of difference between the three modalities. You see the verbal only is about 70%. So about 70% of the material could be recalled from the verbal only presentation. The visual only presentation is about the same, maybe say 72% of the material was retained after 3 hours. And then the verbal plus visual was the most effective modality for this kind of short-term retention, and it tops out somewhere around 85%. But the real news of this study was that the researchers went back to the subjects who were exposed to these different modalities, and they checked their retention after 3 days. And here is where you see dramatic results. For the verbal only, that is, if you just listen to a lecture, and this may be bad news for podcasting, is that the retention rate after 3 days is only about 10%, which I think suggests that if you're going to be just listening to these audio files, you're not going to retain very much of it. You need to be able to sit there, take notes at the same time, or look at the PowerPoint slides, make notes for yourself. That's going to dramatically increase your recall. After all, if you're trying to do well on the tests, simply listening to it, in your car stereo on the way down the hill from Placerville is not necessarily the optimal mode for retaining information. And again, if you look at the chart on the PowerPoint slide, retention after 3 days was only about 10% for the verbal only modality. For visual only, it was about double that, say 20%. But again, if you think about it, after 3 days and your audience is only getting about 20% retention, that is not very impressive. However, if you look at the verbal and visual presentation and look at what the retention is like after 3 days on the chart there, you'll see that 65% is retained for that audience with verbal and visual. I think that's pretty powerful evidence that suggests that a real good reason for using visual aids is that they dramatically seem to enhance listener retention. And really, if you think about it, that's a very important thing. You don't want a presentation to be made on one day that would simply disappear from people's minds. You want them to have that retention level, and it pretty much appears as a result of this particular study that verbal plus visual is by far the most efficient and effective means of increasing listener retention for people's messages. Now, having said all that, let me give you a caveat and the kind of question that you should ask when you hear of any study. If you'll recall, I said that this particular study was financed by the 3M Corporation. 3M, as luck would have it, is also probably the world's leading supplier of things like overhead projectors. They are in the business of providing or helping to provide visual aids for people who make presentations. Chances are the overhead projector that's in the back of the classroom that you're in right now is made by the 3M Corporation. Now, I don't know that that necessarily disqualifies the study or that we should all say, oh, well, this is just all bunk. Because the truth is, it wasn't 3M who actually did the study. It was researchers from the University of Minnesota. And frankly, whether it proved that they did or didn't ultimately provide an impact, that whether or not visual aids were effective or not, I think those results would have been reported, perhaps not quite so loudly by the 3M Corporation. But I think we probably can give the benefit of the doubt here to this study and suggest that there really is some data that would allow us to conclude that a verbal plus a visual presentation is the most effective. One of the things I've tried to do in this lecture is to also identify the myriad numbers or types of visual aids, and of course, I'm going to miss a bunch, and I really want to just touch very lightly on a whole list of different modalities for presenting visual aids, talk very briefly about the advantages and disadvantages. Your textbook also has some additional information in this area that you're going to read, but again, I just wanted to touch on it briefly. The first on my list is overhead transparencies. These have actually come a long way from the old days of people writing with wax crayons on a rolling plastic sheet. Overhead transparencies can now be manufactured fairly efficiently, and because this is the technology that kind of the maximum, highest technology, best use that you're going to have available to you in the classrooms, this might be something that you want to take a look at. It is now possible to produce transparencies using simply a laser printer or an inkjet printer. There are transparencies that can be run through those kind of printing machines and turn out extremely serviceable overhead transparencies. That didn't always used to be the case. I can remember 15 years ago here at Sac State actually using a machine where you would take a printout of a page that you wanted to turn into a transparency, bundle it with the transparency itself, and then run it through a machine that actually burned the image onto the transparency. And when it came out, it looked terrific. The only problem was, within 12 hours of actually making the transparency, the letters and things, the printing on these transparencies would begin to flake off. And after a certain amount of time, say a month, you could go back to a file where you'd put a transparency and just see all the letters kind of littered in the bottom of the manila folder. It was not a very effective, permanent way of making good transparencies. And I think the technology that we have now is pretty effective. In fact, you can go into any of the copy shops on campus, simply taking your file or taking a printout, and they'll be able to burn it onto a transparency for you. And it's fairly inexpensive as well. For years and years, 35 millimeter slides were the kind of modality of choice for people who had a large number of images that they wanted to present in the classroom or in traditional presentations. So, for instance, if you were an art history professor, one of the most important things to your teaching was your stash of 35 millimeter slides of all the various kind of art objects that you wanted to present in class. I know that one of the things that I'm working with now in my kind of alter ego, one of the things that I do is I go out and make presentations at orchid societies, and I have a fairly extensive collection of 35 millimeter slides of orchids that I can, you know, craft into a presentation. I get my handy Kodak carousel projector and I'm off. But of course, there are some disadvantages to this. The slides, you know, when you get 20 or 25,000 35 millimeter slides, you're talking about storage problems. You're talking about the facility with which you can kind of move those around. And of course, the real bad news is that Kodak has stopped making slide projectors. because the digital photography revolution has arrived. There were some years there where it looked like it was going to be kind of a standoff. People weren't sure that they could get digital images that had a high enough resolution, that had true enough color. But the truth is, within the last 5 years, those problems have been overcome. And I think you'll find that though people really like to have their slides, increasingly we're going to be moving to digital imagery to take care of this problem. The next one on my list is flip charts and posters. And you've probably used materials like this. This is every presenter's friend. Flip charts can be effective because you can actually write on flip charts prior to a meeting, have a sheet in between the pages that are actually written on in case you have to do some additional notes. But this would allow you to, in a very kind of quick and effective way, make notes during a meeting or take when you're taking suggestions from people in a meeting. A flip chart is probably the best way for you to deal with it. It's low tech, it's inexpensive. The problem is that they can be large and bulky and difficult to store. So obviously you wouldn't find them to be the absolute best way to kind of deal with every situation. Objects and models are another way that people have often used visual aids to get their message across. If you want to look at a good architectural presentation, you will often see that when an architect comes to pitch a job to a board of directors or to an individual, they will actually make a model of the building or the addition that they're trying to pitch to the person. It's easier to see if you can look at it in three dimensions. In my own kind of history, one of the most compelling moments in my early teaching career was when a student brought in what I can only describe as, it looked like a tennis ball with hundreds of sharp nails sticking out of it. And there was a long cord that this thing was attached to. And he simply took it out of a bag in front of the classroom and asked the students what this was and why it was significant. And there were all kinds of suggestions. Oh, I don't know. It's a meat tenderizer. It's for aerating your lawn. Everybody was wrong, of course, because what this was really about was it was a religious object from Southeast Asia. And the deal is that young men, it was a self-flagellation device. That is, young men would kind of whip this object on the cord over their back and bloody themselves as a sign of supplication to their religious figures. Not exactly the thing you would kind of expect, but boy, what a powerful visual device. When I was in the second grade, I became the king of show and tell because as a little 7-year-old kid or 6-year-old kid, I had my very own cow skull. Well, let me tell you, this puts you practically at the top of the neighborhood hierarchy if you're a little kid, if you have an authentic cow skull. This was way before Southwestern design was kind of in vogue. The point is, objects and models can be powerful ways for us to present a vision to a particular audience. They're not always practical, though. Handouts are a very simple, very low-tech way of getting information to audiences other than simply talking to them. One of the difficulties can be, though, if you provide too much information on a handout and you pass that out at the beginning of a speech or beginning of a presentation, I think you're going to have a problem where most people are paying attention to your handout instead of you. I know when I go to academic presentations, one of the expectations is that you'll have a copy of your presentation for people in the room. Some presenters make those, 10, 15, 20-page papers available to the audience prior to their presentation. What I prefer to do is to make my presentation first and then make those copies available because I find that I lose my audience. They become enthralled with like kind of looking at what I'm talking about instead of listening to me and listening to the presentation that I'm making and the commentary that I'm making on what it is I've done. So while handouts can be very effective, they're very low tech. I mean, what's the worst that can happen with a handout, right? Paper cuts, I guess? I don't know. The point is they have the advantage of being easy and cheap, the disadvantage potentially of kind of losing your audience, losing control of your audience. Two final kinds of visual aids that I want to talk about. The first is whiteboards and chalkboards. Of course, you know, just simply writing something on a chalkboard is a very kind of crude form of visual aid. The problem can be that they're not terribly permanent, and if you have bad handwriting, people aren't going to really understand what it is you're doing. We now have whiteboards around the university. There may be a whiteboard in the room where you have your lab. And of course, you have to be careful what kind of markers you use. They typically need to be labeled dry erase. Believe me, you don't want to be the one knucklehead who uses a permanent marker on a dry erase bulletin board. It can be very difficult to remove. You're going to anger your janitorial staff, and you're going to look like a complete idiot in front of the rest of the audience. So be careful about all that. The final one that I haven't talked about that is kind of the elephant in the room here is, of course, PowerPoint, which has captured a very high percentage of the computer placements in business. It is the primary software package that people use for making presentations or for crafting, visuals for meetings and things like that. We're going to talk about that more in a little bit. Let me simply say this. While you can use computer-assisted visual aids, that is PowerPoint, to generate an overhead transparency for the purposes of this class, one of the things we're not going to allow is we're not going to allow people to come in with computers and laptops and LCD projectors or to use the LCD projectors in the rooms. The problem is that we are simply cramming too many speeches into too little time, so that if even one person has a significant problem with the use of the LCD, that we're going to back up everybody else. And so we're not going to create an arms race. We're not going to have a deal where in order to get a decent grade on a speech in here, you have to have a laptop computer and use the LCD projector. We're not going to go to that. We're going to kind of ratchet it back one step and say, okay, if you don't have access to an LCD projector, if you don't have a computer-driven audiovisual, what do you do in that case? Because so many of the presentations that you're going to do are going to be more informal, they're going to be to smaller groups of audiences, and you're not going to be using a computer in order to do those. So we will talk more about PowerPoint at the end of this. I do want to talk about some rules of thumb, some general guidelines for using visual aids. I think all that's important. I think I've come up with four that I would want to leave you with. One is that the visual aid should never become the reason for the speech. Remember, you're doing a presentation. You're doing a speech. This is not show and tell. You are not in the fourth grade. And as a result, if the visual aid is the focus for the speech, people are not going to pay much attention to your content. Visual aids are always supplementary. They provide a data point in a speech. They provide a crucial bit of information or a crucial connection in a speech. They provide illustration, but they are never the reason for the speech the way they were in show and tell in the fourth grade. Another issue has to do with the appropriateness of the length and the format for the speech that you're using. Some years ago, I was teaching Comms 103 in the summertime, and I had a woman come in to do her informative speech on how to prepare a business plan. I know it certainly would have been a scintillating speech had she been able to successfully give it. But here's the problem. In support of her 5 to 7 minute speech on business plans, she had, count them, 41 overhead transparencies. 41 for a 5 to 7 minute speech. She was on about the third one, and it was already 6.5 minutes into her speech, and I had to stop her, and she was astonished, tearful, thought her life was over. It was a horrendous, dramatic way to end the speech. Oh, my God. But it's pretty clear that this woman had never actually practiced the speech with the actual transparencies. Whether or not you have access to an overhead transparency or not, you should be able to practice to make sure that the visual aids don't dominate the speech, that they merely provide a kind of supplementary view. And you can't be having 41 overheads for a 5 to 7 minute speech. I'm not sure that if I didn't talk at all and did nothing but take transparencies on and off the overhead projector, that I could have done all of that in 5 to 7 minutes. She claimed that she had practiced the speech, but she had practiced the speech without the visual aids, and that's the real problem here, and perhaps the lesson to be learned. A third thing you should think about as you're giving a speech, particularly when we get out into less familiar environments, is that you should know what technology is available to you. Is there going to be a microphone? Is there going to be a blackboard? Is there going to be a flip chart or an LCD projector? Or, perhaps more importantly, do you have to plan on bringing your own? Do you need to just, as a backup, make sure that you have your own laptop and your own LCD projector? That's important information, because if your, you know, business, if your sales pitch, if your presentation is premised on the use of these audio visuals, you want to make sure that you have control over the technology that allows you to give them, and you don't have to depend on somebody else's. What happens if the bulb is burnt out? What happens if, oh, we're sorry, it's on the blink, we just haven't been paying attention to that? That's not very helpful for you. And since this is your presentation, it's your burden to make sure that the technology works. So either you need to get access to that room where you're making the presentation prior to having people get there, or you need to make sure that you bring the materials with you, or have a lower tech backup so that if for some reason the LCD fails, you have the PowerPoint slides printed up and available for the people that are going to be at the presentation. My final kind of rule of thumb related to visual aids, and if you'd like to, you can call this Burnett's Rule of Visual Aids, simply goes like this. The higher the technology involved in the presentation, the more you need to be thinking about redundancy and backup. Pretty simple, but I think a compelling issue. If you're using a high-tech manner for presenting a visual aid, you've got a laptop, you've got an LCD projector, you're using an Elmo kind of projector, which is a means of presenting objects visually. There are lots of different possibilities here. Let's say a computer-assisted whiteboard, where everything you put on a whiteboard is actually transferred to a computer file. If you're relying on that bit of technology, you have to seriously sit down and think, what if that fails? What if I'm not able to use that LCD projector, that computer-assisted whiteboard, whatever it is, and what am I going to use as a backup? Okay? So very simply, the higher the technology that you use in presenting a visual aid, the more you need to think about redundancy and backup. If all you've got is handouts, there's not much that can go wrong there, except maybe you've like left them at home or something like that. But when you get into higher technology, you have to consider the possibility of failures and move from there. This final section of the lecture, and I know this is going to be a somewhat shorter lecture than you're used to, and I'm sure that's going to make you all terribly upset, are just some things to point out that some of the problems that people use or happen onto when they're using visual aids. This next slide, I think, makes the point rather dramatically that size matters. One of the most important problems that I see with student-generated visual aids for use in classrooms like 103 is they simply do not pay attention to the size of the font that they're using to make their visual aids. Because what looks good and plenty large on a computer screen right in front of us as we're preparing the visual aid, it is simply not going to work when that same visual aid is turned into an overhead transparency or is broadcast using an LCD projector or something like that. 20-point font looks very, very large on your computer screen. However, when you try and project that, it's going to look tiny, and people 5 feet away from the screen are not going to be able to read it. You see 32 and 48-point font. That is pretty much the range in which Microsoft sets the defaults within PowerPoint. There are some larger ones, but in general, probably between, say, 32 and 48, you'll find for most, and there's a reason they set those fonts at that particular default. One of the problems, of course, you say, well, why not use large font sizes? The problem is, the bigger the font size, and you see a 72-point font at the bottom of the page, you'll find that you get less information per line. Again, this is a kind of a balancing act. It's got to be big enough for people to read, but it also has to be small enough that you can get enough information on the page. So think carefully about size. Another issue to think about when you're looking at the fonts that might be used to make visual aids is what are called the difference between a serif font, that's S-E-R-I-F, and a sans serif font, sans, S-A-N-S, being the French term for without, right? So really what we're talking about here are fonts that have serifs and fonts that do have serifs. You say, aha! So the key question that has to come next is, what exactly is a serif? And I think that's a fine question. If you think about the type, the font that you're maybe most familiar with, because it's the default font on Microsoft Word, is Times New Roman. If you look at the letters that are produced for words in Times New Roman, you'll see that they have little decorations, little edges or little platforms that the letters are actually sitting on. And those are decorations. They're decorative. They're called serifs. So Times New Roman is, in fact, a serif font. If you look at a font, and you might want to try this experiment, just go into Microsoft Word and change the font on a document from Times New Roman to Arial, A-R-I-A-L, Arial. Because Arial is the classic sans serif font. That is, it is without serifs. And if you actually download the PowerPoint slide, you'll see I've got a line here in Arial and a line here in Times New Roman. And that's because I want to point out the difference between serif fonts and sans serif fonts. And I say this because the general recommendation for people who design visual aids is that if you're going to be projecting a visual aid, if you're going to be, you know, using it in a large format in front of a large audience, you probably want to use a sans serif font, a font without serifs, a font like Arial, because a plainer font projects better, it's cleaner on the page, it's easier for people to read from a faraway distance. Which actually leads me to the last kind of suggestion on this particular page, and that is the notion that you want to be very, very careful in using exotic fonts. I know that, you know, Old English script might look good to you. I know that there might be some of these fonts that you can change an entire presentation to with the click of a mouse, and you think, oh, how cool is that? Well, the problem is they are often very difficult to read when they are projected. It's also a problem if you move your presentation from the computer that you created it on to a computer that does not have the same font, that same exotic font built into it, then the program will simply substitute a default font, and it's going to destroy the spacing. It's going to make just a mess. So use exotic fonts very, very carefully. It's far better to stay with something a little plainer. I have some suggestions for using text in PowerPoint that people probably need to be mindful of. The first is, and well, you can probably hold my PowerPoint slides to these, and I've probably violated some of them. Oh, well. The first is that you should use no more than 4 to 6 lines of text per visual aid or per page in PowerPoint. If you're using more than 4 to 6 lines, then you're probably using a font that's far too small for people to read effectively. So no more than 4 to 6 lines. Secondly, use phrases. It's not necessary for you to use full sentences in a PowerPoint slide with full grammatical marks and things. You don't need to use periods and things. Just use phrases, not full sentences. remember to use upper and lower case, right? Uppercase are capitals, lower cases are the small letters, but usually for beginning a line, for instance, we use uppercase. And again, Microsoft has built some help into the system for you because they've got defaults already built in with this. Try to leave the same space at the top of the visual aid as you're going to have a multi-page PowerPoint presentation. Try not to mess around with the space at the top because it jars the audience every time you change a page. If you leave the space the same and use the same font size, it's less jarring to your audience. And then finally, you want to limit the lines of text within any individual line to no more than 40 characters. And remember, a character is a letter and a space. And so if you're getting more than 40 or so characters in a particular line of type, again, you are probably using a font that's too small for your audience to make sense of. So those are just some additional guidelines. 4 to 6 lines of text per visual aid. Use phrases, not full sentences. Use upper and lower case letters for ease of reading. Try to leave the same space at the top of the visual aid, and then limit those lines to no more than about 40 characters. The next slide shows a picture of a giant thumb crushing a guy. And this is a clip art, of course. And again, this is one of those things that has been made far easier by the use of computer programs than the old days when you had to be a graphic artist or an artist to design your own clip art. Now you can simply drag and drop it. There are programs that advertise 500,000 different kinds of clip art. And the problem is I've seen presentations where people wanted to use all 500,000 of them. It can be a mess. If you're going to use clip art, please, please be judicious. Be prudent. Don't use very much of it. And when you do use it, make sure that it has some impact and that it becomes memorable. I would not use a huge amount of clip art laced throughout an entire presentation. I think the problem is that it gets a little too cutesy and people begin to, frankly, tune you out as being not a serious presenter. Okay. I want to talk in these last few minutes of this particular lecture about the use of PowerPoint. It has become ubiquitous. It is the most significant presentation software in terms of market share around the globe. Microsoft has done a brilliant job of kind of integrating it into every possible situation. But I think there are some reasons here for us to kind of put the brakes on and think carefully. I'm going to first talk about how not to use PowerPoint. And of course, the most significant one is, and this may be a do as I say, not as I do, you shouldn't be using your PowerPoint slides as a running outline, as kind of we do here for these lectures. The truth is that PowerPoints often have too much of the original presentation in the text, and the result is that there's a lot of fatigue in the audience. If you're doing nothing more than reading the PowerPoint slides, oh my Lord, it is dreadful boring. And some of the worst meetings I've ever been to are people who have not very skilled use of PowerPoint slides, and they simply get up there and they read, and it's just terrible. Remember that you should use PowerPoint to generate illustrations of particular data point or pieces of support. The graph that I used earlier in the presentation was, of course, an example of that kind of use of PowerPoint, where I was able to build the graph and make it fairly clear and effective. That's one of the best uses of PowerPoint. I've already mentioned that slides are easily moved over from the computer file to appropriate uses for overhead projectors. You can simply run these things off onto either LaserJet or inkjet transparencies, and they are different for the two technologies. So if you're using a LaserJet printer, make sure you have LaserJet transparencies. If you're using an inkjet printer, make sure you have inkjet transparencies. Usually you end up printing on the rough side. There's a rough side and a smooth side, and so you'll have to just watch out how that works. If this is a too sophisticated a job for you, it is easy to go to a place like Kinko's or the on-campus copy shops, and they can make these PowerPoint slides for you. But of course, that doesn't really cut to the heart of the matter, which is whether or not it's a good idea to use PowerPoint at all. In fact, there was a fairly intense dialogue that went on for a number of years between professional designers, professional presenters, and academics as to whether or not PowerPoint was a net boon to presenters or whether it ultimately made their presentations less effective. One of the key players in all of this is a retired Yale professor. His name is Edward Tufte. That's T-U-F-T-E. If you Google Edward Tufte, you'll find his webpage, which is a kind of fascinating one. And Tufte takes the position that, in fact, PowerPoint is evil, that PowerPoint makes us dumber, that PowerPoint leads us to make simply awful, boring presentations. And he's not really shy about saying that to anyone he wants to. In fact, he's written a small booklet, a monograph, I guess you would call it, that's available on his website that has, I think, a really smart argument about how it is that PowerPoint makes things ugly and makes things less understandable. In fact, one of the things that I wanted to illustrate with the use of the design template that you have these particular PowerPoint slides on. You may have gotten them printed off on black and white, but if you look at the original slides, they're horrible. They're ugly. This kind of garish green and black, oh my God, I did that for a reason, to point out that, you know, a click of a button and you can change the design on your entire PowerPoint file. And sometimes those choices are bad ones. And I can't imagine a good situation where you would use this particular kind of design. But for Tufte, it goes much deeper. And what he argues is that because PowerPoint is so linear, because PowerPoint is so not information dense, right, that it's difficult to pack a lot of information into a single slide, the result is that you get these kind of warped presentations where important things get missed. And one of the things that he argues actually got missed was years ago when the Columbia space shuttle was getting ready to land and it had the terrible problem with the heat shield and ended up disintegrating over Texas and we lost all those astronauts. What Tufte did is he went back and looked at the presentations that were made by the engineers as they were deciding whether or not this hole in the space shuttle's protective tiles was significant or not. And he looked at the presentations done by the engineers that were done, frankly, on PowerPoint. And what he found was that the most critical information that these people needed in making the decision about whether or not to okay Columbia coming back with this problem with its protective heat shields was simply that PowerPoint subordinated the critical information because they were using a template. They were using a design that ultimately put the most important information in a third or fourth level subordination that made it really hard for people to understand what the significant issue was. So, for instance, they had some information that suggested that they've done tests before on chunks coming out of the protective tiles and ultimately whether or not that would prevent a danger or a hazard to the astronauts. Unfortunately, what didn't show up on this slide very well was that the chunk that was actually taken out of the Columbia's wing was like 600 times bigger than the test that they had done and were presenting in these PowerPoint slides. The result is he thinks that a terrible decision was made to go ahead and land with the damage that they had, and the result was the tragedy that we now know as Columbia blowing up over Texas. Ultimately, I think you have to be extremely careful the way you use PowerPoint. I think that some of the criticisms that Tufte has made are valid. I think some of them are a little off base. You maybe have to want to decide for yourself. And I think you could do a lot worse than simply going to Tufte's website. And again, if you put T-U-F-T-E into Google, you will find an easy URL to get to that. Ultimately, what I would want you to do is to avoid getting overly kind of sucked in by the kinds of templates and the kind of overly busy designs that you often see in PowerPoint. Keep your presentations clean. Keep them to the point of supplementing your presentation rather than being the kind of whole presentation set forth in front of you. And I think that you'll ultimately make visual aids that will be powerful, that will provide a key insight to people doing listening to your presentations. And I think that you'll be seen as a stronger presenter for understanding the role that PowerPoint can and cannot play in business presentations. Thanks very much.